Hey, thank you for choosing to spend some time with us here at Awake the Iron. These podcasts are also posted as videos on our website, so be sure to visit awaketheiron.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the Awake the Iron Academy. You'll never be bored again as you explore vast archives of videos, interviews, documents, lectures, humor, and more, covering an ever-increasing range of topics. Think of it like a self-guided, self-paced college, but without the mountains of debt. We would also love to hear from you, and you can do that two ways, either through the website contact form, or leave us a voice message by calling the Awake the Iron hotline. That's 601-654-IRON. Previously on Awake the Iron. Got a really good friend of mine on, one of my best friends from long, long ago. He is the Hoosier Herald. He's also the Marquis of Milan. His name is Mark Jumpshot Jacobs, is with us today. What in the heck is this about dinosaurs and there's maybe deception in there?
It's not like, oh, it's this big hoax because there's no bones there. No, they admit, like, you're not looking at bones. You're probably not even looking at the fossil. You're looking at, you know, a reconstruction of plaster based on the fossils that we did find, which are over there, and you can't go look at them.
I think that many people, when they come to a museum, don't necessarily realize what things they're looking at and which ones are replicas of those specimens.
How long does it take for bones to decompose? Again, if animals do not destroy or move the bones,
right, so
skeletons take 20 years to dissolve in the soil. Like if you bury a body or you bury an animal, even the bones completely gone in 20 years. Okay. However, in sand or neutral soil, skeletons can remain intact for hundreds of years.
Okay.
So how do we get millions? I have no idea.
Is that amazing to find this kind of soft tissue in a fossil this old? And what can the soft tissue really tell us?
Well, it's very amazing. It's utterly shocking, actually, because it flies in the face of everything that we understand about how tissues and cells degrade.
Even if there isn't an overt deception, which I know sometimes there is, but even if there's not, there could be mistakes. One phrase I hate a lot is, you got to trust the science. It's science. Are we trusting a scientist and his or her interpretation of data? Right? Is that what you mean by science?
A few times where there were accidentally discovered fossils from like a regular person in their backyard or something, they were suggested that from the experts to look there. Like, hey, you know, there's might be something over there. And it made me think of how you have an Easter egg hunt for kids. You know, like, hey, look, there might be something over there. Oh my gosh, what did you find? Oh, how fun. Open that up and see what it is. And it just kind of blows my mind. Like, are they doing that to us? Like, oh, look over there. Look over there. You might find something. Oh my goodness, what is that? And that's really annoying if that's true, you know? Huh. It's just a little fishy to me. I mean, it's possible, but I don't know.
But it feels fishy. Yeah, for me personally, it's not, I can't really consider it knowledge because I'm kind of taking someone's word for it. I don't know. It seems thin to me.
It's 11:59 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with Music and the Truth Until Dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall.
The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already.
I don't want to lose her.
We watched you guys land on the moon.
No,
which
you didn't.
Was...
No, you didn't. You watched animation.
It is Photoshop, but it's has to be.
No, screw your freedom.
Get vaccinated now.
I will never be on the wrong side again.
Back to the decomposing point. Based on your knowledge so far, do we know that is true? Meaning, bones for the most part are going to be, you know, gone, you know, within a couple hundred years.
Well, I think so. At least the regular decomposition of like 20 years, because. You one person can be around that long to watch it and test it, you know. Mm. So yeah, once we get into bigger numbers, then what, like, are we just gonna leave a ledger for all the future generations, like, I buried this thing, so 10,000 years from now go look at it?
Right,
we don't really know.
Well, I mean, I think that, like, when you started, I think that was one of the first things that you said that really caught my attention, because in my mind, like, when I think about the things that are certainly to be left behind when I leave, bones would have to be on there, you know, like, it's, you know, people get pretty passionate about that too, right? You know, like, that's why people want to be buried versus cremated, you know, because, like, we need bones, you know. In fact, I remember early on, when I was doing church work, I've never come across this problem before, but there was some person that actually was quite bothered by someone in their family who was cremated, because they're like, I don't think that they could be resurrected, you know, like, you know, so when I say all this to say, like, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking bones are, you put me in the ground. Yeah, sure. The flab and all that stuff will deteriorate, but my bones will be around, right? But if we're following the science, quote unquote, you know, is that even true? You know, that.
Yeah. Like in a coffin, you know, they would last longer. So, like, this says, in 50 years, blah, blah, blah. I get grossed out, so I'm not reading it. eventually, everything will disintegrate. And after 80 years in the coffin, your bones will crack, leaving nothing but a brittle frame. A body takes 10 to 15 years to decompose to a skeleton, right? So that's like, okay, then the skeleton is still there. Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think, yeah, it's the common knowledge is that it's, but the bones don't last forever.
Even if some bones, based on the one thing that was saying hundreds of years, even if some bones lasted a thousand years, which would be way outside of the parameters of what the one thing was saying, that's like a blip on the radar if we're talking of hundreds of millions of years.
Yeah.
Right.
It just doesn't compute to me, for me. I don't know.
Well, and then, you know, again, to not to complicate things even further, but, you know, supposedly, you know, our cars are fueled by what?
Yeah, I was wondering. Fossil. I was wondering, you know that, I mean, too.
So it's like at some point,
so
the bone is not a bone.
Yeah. Right? So if the animals that die just out, they decompose quickly or are eaten or both, and then the ones that are buried might last. I can't forget the initial one was 20 years or whatever, and then it was a couple hundred or it was hundreds of years if it was a specific type of soil or what a sand or whatever it said. Yeah. Right. Okay. So the ones on top right away, the other ones hundreds of years, but yet there's some that are more than 10,000 years. So they're fossilized. Which ones decomposed into oil?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. They would say that, and it's all the plant matter and everything too, you know, so the fossil fuels are from fossils, but I mean, they would really just say, decayed plant and animal matter. Now what's funny is if dinosaurs and a whole bunch of other stuff turn into oil, and then plastic comes from that, right? Like petroleum-based plastics. Mm-hmm. And then we make like little plastic dinosaurs. So are plastic dinosaurs made from real dinosaurs?
I guess so. Well, that's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
I'm wondering, can you prove that oil is decomposed rotted plants and dinosaurs?
I know. I don't think so. I think it would be a theory. I'd like to see proof if anybody has it.
Like, is there like a microbiologist that can, you know, because there's nothing to compare it to, right?
Right. Like, but let's just sit around a million years and see.
Well, that could get weird really fast.
Yeah. Well, I know some people that think oil isn't even, what's the word? Scarce or finite. Mm-hmm. Like the earth is always making it. Kind of like your blood. Like if you donate blood, but then like you'll make more. So it's always there.
I came across something like that too. And a couple things I was looking at, they were saying that like oil wells that had dried up were like filling up again. And I don't know, someone could argue that, oh, you know, like a vein over here was never tapped and it finally made its way through or whatever. I still don't know if maybe I'm completely wrong. I don't know. I don't know how you prove that this stuff, this liquid that we call oil, how do you prove that that is rotted, decomposed plants and animals, which apparently decay in 100 years anyway? I don't know. It would have to be like certain circumstances, but then how much are we talking? And supposedly there's oil everywhere.
When they first found petroleum, because they were beginning to make motors and needed on axles of wheels on railroad trains and all that sort of thing, and remember, trains started in the beginning of the 19th century, then oil went from just a lubricant to a fuel, and it made it valuable. And Rockefeller happened to be the smartest man in the business at the time, but he made most of his money, or much of it, off the transport of the petroleum as well as selling it. But one thing they realized was, because oil is putting a price on oil is like putting a price on a pail of water. You know, no initial cost is in the ground, and in those days they were some of it almost what you'd call surface mining the oil. They didn't go down deep. So in order to get the price up, they hit on the idea that they would have to make it appear to be scarce. After we take the next few barrels out, we're probably going to have to close as well. You know, that kind of thing. Well, a very fortuitous event. In 1892, there was a convention in Geneva of scientists to determine what organic substances are. Well, the definition of organic is a substance with hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon. And so it's usually a living substance, a tree. You analyze a dead tree, hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen, and grass, and so on, living things. Animals, we are hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon. So at this Geneva Convention, Rockefeller took advantage of sending some scientists over who said, oil, petroleum, is hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon. Therefore, it must be derived from the spoiling, the rotting of formerly living matter. And playing the game properly, when this scientific convention was over, they defined oil as a residue from formerly living matter. Well, that makes it a fossil fuel. I don't know why they decided to use the word fossil, but it says formerly living matter, it's fossil. Well, of course, today, and another thing we should know is that there has never been a fossil, a real fossil, found below 16,000 feet. And you can't argue at 16,000 is a level line because someplace the ground sinks and so on. But 16 is what the scientists say, 16,000. We mine oil, or we drill for oil, at 30,000, 33,000, 28,000 every day of the week. So right there, we rule it out that it isn't fossil fuel. It's called fossil fuel for the minds of the public to feel that it is an asset that is running out, being depleted. We talk about depletion allowance, which is a lot of, you know. And actually, if you know the world's oil supply, you know that it is not going to run out for an awfully long time. It is the second most prevalent liquid on Earth, and we haven't begun to dig. Well, with all that background, you see, the people in charge of the petroleum business, for perfectly reasonable business things, like any other man in the business, wants to keep his price as high as he can get away with, and the way to do is just say, well, there's no more. We the last barrel is going to cost $1,000, and then it's all done, and they preach that stuff. What bothers me is that in geology books, it's in there. The geologists say it's a fossil fuel. They've been bought. I mean, I went to a four-year federal staff energy seminar run by the government of the United States during the so-called energy crisis. I was the participant that represented the railroad industry. The airline industry was there. Every AA, administrative assistant of senators and congressmen, was there. The CIA was there, the Defense Department was there, the State Department was there. Sometimes sitting right in front of me in the row would be Henry Kissinger with his friend, the head of Department of Defense. It's too bad I can't put the names with them. But anyway, people like that, top men in the government, sitting there listening to the Federal Staff Energy Seminar. Well, what this was doing is for 4 years, they were teaching a propaganda line to the leading people in this country, and therefore to the leading people in the world, when you include the Kissinger and Schlesinger, among others. And the object of it was, as Kissinger used in his own terms when it was time for him to speak, to create a world price for oil. In other words, not 30 cents a gallon here and 90 cents a gallon there, but let's get a world price. That's their goal, and they're trying to do that for wheat and everything else. We don't realize what the controls are, whether it's oil or some of these other things. Almost everything today is being categorized at the highest price they can possibly make it go. And so calling petroleum a fossil fuel is the basis for this system with respect to petroleum.
I don't know, right, man.
Yeah, it's all weird. Like sometimes things... weird. Sometimes things petrify and, you know, and become rocks and become, I mean, this is what they tell us, you know, like interesting layers out west, you know, with the Grand Canyon and all this, like, oh, that's just sediment and everything over time. They become rocks. And then other times, I guess longer, that becomes oil. Sometimes things petrify. Sometimes they become fossils. Sometimes they don't. Now, just because I don't know doesn't mean it's all wrong. You know, that's like mm-hmm. logical fallacy of ignorance or whatever that is.
Right.
I don't know. But now, there are some other problems or questions that I have, too, about the dinosaurs. Just physically, some of them, they say, are so big. I don't know if they could, you know, if they would get tendonitis in their knees. Like, I've heard some animal experts say that, like, this guy back here, Brontosaurus or whatever, like, if it was really that big and that heavy, the bones would crush under its own weight. I mean, you can't just make a bigger bone. Like, just like skyscrapers back in the day, you know, were stone, and like, you could only go so high. You can't just make a bigger one because it's just going to be too heavy. So it wasn't until steel framed and whatever, then we could go higher, right? So it's not just like, oh, here's an elephant, we could have something 20 times that big with just bigger bones. Bones are strong, but they're not that strong. I think. Or like the heart pumping blood through, like, I remember some people saying like the heart would have to be ginormous, or they'd have to have like 10 hearts or like to get all this blood everywhere. Or what else? Physical.
How would the guts stay in?
Yeah, that's gross.
It is, but like, I'm.
Yeah.
How in the hell would the rib cage keep the stomach from basically falling out of the bottom of its body? How would those leg bones stand up to those pressures? I mentioned earlier there were engineers that have gone at this and said there's no way in hell that the bones would just crumble under the weight of what we're being presented with.
Again, right. I don't know how you prove any of it.
Yeah, like they eat, you know, the big one eats like five smaller dinosaurs who each weigh 2 tons, and like that's all sitting in their gut. Like, yeah. And some people have questioned the, like the T-Rex with the big head, and it's all on the forward, and it's supposed to balance with the tail. Like, it doesn't seem like that would work. Like, I can't see it walking around. I mean, I've seen Jurassic Park, but
right.
You know what I mean? Just like some of them off balance with like everything on the front.
Well, an interesting thing about that, going right along with that, is I just watched this whole documentary thing about Jurassic Park, the movie, and the visual effects guys who, like, they really pioneered. It was like the first visual, like CGI dinosaur they ever made, which looked awesome. But the guys who were animating it were like, no one's ever seen this thing move. So how is it going to move? So they, you know, they have to invent how it looks. And then what we see portrayed, you buy it because, you know, it has elements of real things moving. It actually showed this, like, all the animators went outside and were like filming themselves running around, like, acting like dinosaurs so that they could watch themselves and then apply those same movements to their animating so that it's, you know, because it's familiar, and then your brain sees it and you're like, oh yeah, that you, and you believe it. Right.
Yeah. And they even said and admitted that a lot of the dinosaurs in that movie were much bigger than what they think they were. And that's fine because it's a movie, and so they're just going to exaggerate it for cinematic effect. But right. But people still have that in their mind, you know, like, wow, that's how big a T-Rex is. That's how big the Brontosaurus is. But even their fossils or whatever weren't that big.
Hmm.
So, Mark, you had said, you know, unless you go to study paleontology or whatever, maybe you can figure it out. Now, I have a quote from a paleontologist. I will play this for everyone.
Former paleontology student Michael Forsell claimed on a radio interview with leading paleontologist Jack Horner that he was a total fraud, fabricating evidence and perpetuating the myth of dinosaurs. He continued on saying, "I started my career in the field of paleontology only to leave my studies once I realized the whole thing was a sham. It's nonsense. Most of the so-called skeletons in museums are actually plaster cast. They even do it openly on documentaries now, preserving the bones my ass. I struggled as a student mainly because I could not tell the difference between a fossilized egg and an ordinary rock, and of course, there is no difference. I was treated like a leper when I refused to buy into their propaganda and promptly left the course. Dinosaurs never existed. The whole shebang is a freak show. They just grab a couple of old bones and form them into their latest Frankenstein's monster-like exhibit. We are all being fooled, and it's wrong. But together, we can stop it."
So there we go. I mean, that's just one person's opinion, so... Okay, maybe he's a kook, I don't know, but... That's somebody who studied paleontology.
Right. The guy who was speaking was quoting the paleontologist there, right? So...
Yeah.
Right, and we can't just the same, we can't just believe that either, but it is interesting.
Yeah. Now, another physical problem, if you will, is and this is kind of funny. I'll share the visual. So those of you just listening, make sure you go see the video. So a male and female Stegosaurus are about to mate. Can you please explain how this could occur? I mean, like, you know, like, not to get too graphic, but I mean, just how do they...
How
do they do that? Yeah. I don't know.
Must have been a way.
And here's another one. These are...
Oh, boy. Oh, my.
Someone's lying.
I mean, just picture, you know, how do they get up in there? I don't know. Serious, though, right? Like,
Those are good points. That's a valid point. Maybe somebody has an... But even if someone has an explanation... That sounds good. I don't know if you could prove it. I mean, you obviously can't, because it would be theoretical. Because there aren't any. I mean, even if there were, which is what we're questioning, even if there were, there aren't any now to observe that, study it. So it would be, oh, well, it must have worked like this, right?
Yeah.
I don't like when things are presented as fact when they're not. I don't like that.
We see the same thing over and over and over, where people are just suckered into pretty pictures, pretty video, and, you know, assuming that they're being told the truth, you know. And I'm here to tell you, we live in an age where the time to assume you're being told the truth is gone. It's a bit like going to buy a car, having the person sell you the car, tell you it's the best car ever, you accepting his word for it, giving him a few thousand bucks and drive away to find out he didn't tell you the truth. That's what's going on here.
It's okay to have theories, and we can speculate about stuff. That's, I love that. I have a big imagination. I make up all kinds of stuff if I wanted to. You know, I like to write stories. I like to read stories, all kinds of stuff. I just don't like when something is presented as, oh, this is 100% and the science is settled. And it's like, No. And you know, this is how the schools, our schools work, is this is it. And that's it. And take the test. And if you regurgitate the information the best, you get an A. I never even thought that I could ask these questions when I was a kid. Well, I mean, yeah, you're kind of just taking what you're being told. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think it was today. I was watching, you know, some video, and there was a reference to this topic. By the way, Kaysen told me that you wanted him to go into it cold. So, right. So I was like, I wanted to kind of have some information prior, but anyway, still pretty cold. But there was some reference to supposedly back in the 1800s, there was a gentleman who fictionalized the discovery of dinosaurs. And then, like, I don't know, a year or two later, he or someone else discovered it. So it was almost like the story preceded the actual finding. Has that come across your studies so far, CJ?
I don't remember, honestly.
Okay.
But I know,
I mean,
that...
I think regardless of you know, whatever's going on, I will say that this subject is something that I think is almost so... It's like everybody just accepts it, right? So there's no reason to prove anything, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just like, I mean, like Kaysen said, you know, never thought in a million years, right? never thought we could question it, but you know.
Yeah, and I think when it started in the mid 1800s, and you can look up the history, I don't remember all the guys' names and all that, but there were these two main dinosaur hunters, and it was like the dinosaur wars, and like see who could find the most and come to their exhibits, you know. So it was all about their museums or whatever, their exhibits. Oh, we found this one that's got this big, you know, evil giant head that can do this. And oh, and then, you know, the competition says, oh, but we've got this one that does that. And so all these people were flocking to the different ones, and they're making money with their exhibits. And then it just grew from there. And maybe other people with other interests, you know, capitalized on that. For example, oh, that helps the story of evolution, maybe, because you would need all this time in order to have these fossils and to create by random chance all these different varieties of giant beasts. And so the whole story, it just kind of goes with the whole story of Big Bang and evolution and millions of years. And so let's have these dinosaurs.
All right, so getting into the history of the dinosaur phenomenon, before even a tooth or toenail was found and presented to the scientific community, the word dinosauria was coined by Sir Richard Owen of the Royal Society in 1842. So let's just take that apart right there. Somebody who is knighted by the aristocracy.
Okay, let's do it. There he is, man. Sir Richard Owen. We've done this before. When you get a sir before your name, it basically means you're a servant. But you're not a servant to just any old place or person. You are a servant to the royal house that knighted you. So here we have Richard Owen. Well, let me come at this a different way. Basically, dinosaurs were invented in 1842. There it is. That's going to be a shock for a lot of people to hear, but here we have this knighted man of the Royal Society coming up with a word to describe dinosaurs as we know them today without a shred of evidence of any kind that they ever existed. Back over to you, Jason.
So Sir Richard Owen was the superintendent of the British Museum Natural History Department when he put forth the notion of dinosauria. As of this point, nothing whatsoever had been found. It was completely 100% pure conjecture in theory. This was during the time when theories on evolution and natural selection were taking hold and the mechanics of which were being hotly debated in the scientific community. The Darwin book that everyone knows on the origin of species doesn't come out until 1859. So there were a lot of theories still floating around, and somehow Sir Richard Owen got the notion of these giant lizards, even though they weren't even trying to tie anything together yet.
Hmm. Right. It seems convenient. Now, okay. So here's the million-dollar question. Well, I mean, you kind of touched on the possibility of it there, but why? You know, let's say it started as a complete ruse and there were a couple guys battling it out for market shares of freak show exhibits and it was all made up or whatever. Let's say that that's what it was in the beginning. But now here we are. And it's like, why, you know, keep that going? I mean, I don't know. That's just money or a distraction. I mentioned earlier that seemed like a lot of effort and time and almost like the programming. It's almost like programming. I can't even remember a time that I didn't think about dinosaurs. Like they've always been there in my life, I guess. And someone would say, well, they're, you know, millions of years old, so they're here before us, so yeah, you would learn about them before you could walk, and you have little dinosaur toys and dinosaur mobile over your head, so that makes sense, I guess. But
Yeah, I guess just the more details of history that they can tell us, then the more everything seems real and that we believe them, you know, like we know all these details about the age of the earth and how everything happened and when all these animals lived. And there's this whole, it's just a whole story that goes with it. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, oh, we don't really know. Oh, this is interesting. I wonder what that is. I don't know. That keeps people questioning. If you're just like, oh, we found this fossil and there's like something weird there, I wonder what that is. I don't know. How'd that get there? So instead of keeping people wondering and inquisitive, then they just, it's better to have an answer, better to have a story. Then it's like, okay, this is how it is.
Right. And if it keeps people who are in control of it, it keeps them in power, right? If it came out that it was all made up in the beginning and, oh yeah, it was just a farce and it kind of got away from us, think about how many people, I mean, it would just crumble. But it makes you wonder, you know, I don't know, maybe somebody will come across this show and they've worked in the back room and they've felt and touched and saw the fossil or the bones. I'd be real curious. If anybody has seen an entire skeleton and can verify it is for sure 200 million year old skeleton, which that one thing said a couple hundred years is decayed or turned into dinosaur juice that we put in our cars. I don't know. I may not ever know for sure, but and I'm okay with that. But I'm at a point in my life where I'm kind of done just accepting someone else saying, oh, well, this is true. And so you have to believe me. No, I don't have to. And I'm of the opinion I'm allowed to read what I want, and I'm allowed to think what I want, and I'm allowed to come to my own conclusion. I tell people all the time that I think people make better decisions when they have all of the information. Like when we were talking about masks and things like that, and a lot of people only had information from one viewpoint, and their whole mindset is based on this one side. And I always just logically am like, well, like in a courtroom, you get to hear both sides. That way you can make the best decision. If you went to a court case and you only heard from the prosecuting side, and then, oh, okay, we're done. Well, yeah, you're going to say, oh, they're guilty for sure or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I encourage anybody who, you know, knows about this stuff, come on the show and we can ask you these questions, because I want to know. I don't really have a, what's the word? I'm not like tied to the answer. Like, I'm fine if there were no dinosaurs or if there were. Mm-hmm. So let's put the number out there. 601-654-IRON, or go to the website. If there's any paleontologists or amateur dinosaur buffs or whatever, we would love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this was very interesting, and I'm going to do some digging on my own, and basically, let's just not believe what we're told. And I don't like the whole idea of, like, if somebody says, oh, I don't think dinosaurs exist, I go, don't be stupid. Of course they existed. You can't just say that without having done the work to look. And if you've followed this show for very long, you know that just a random Google search probably isn't going to get you very deep. So you're going to have to do some digging, call some museums up, ask some questions. I'm kind of tempted to do that and just see. I'm going to make an assumption, and then I'll test it and see that. I'm wondering if, you know, you make a call and, oh, I'm not really sure. You'll have to talk to Bob, and then I'll talk to Bob, and then you get the run around, and then nobody knows, probably. I'm gonna see if that's true. But anyway, really want to thank CJ as being on as usual. Mark, it was fun. I'd have to have him back sometime. And
thank you.
Yeah. So for now, that's it. Hey, you know, drop us a line at the Awake the Iron Hotline, 601-654-IRON. CJ just mentioned it, but, you know, send a text if you got the social anxiety.
Social anxiety!
You don't want to call, you know, you're not old school. You need to do the text or whatever. Go to the website, awaketheiron.com. Go to the website and check out the Academy, or you can just snap the QR code right here. I got it over my shoulder. If you're watching this, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Maybe we'll have a dinosaur tab coming up. But anyway, until next time, be sure to choose love, because hate is just too great a burden to bear. Okay? We'll see ya. Bye.